Coming up, what an excellent day for some alone time. Well, howdy folks, and welcome to Minute 118 of The Exorcist Minute, a show where we endeavor to examine, extrapolate, and excavate The Exorcist, minute by terrifying minute. My name is Lester Ryan Clark.
And I'm Keenan Diaz.
And we'll be your holy guides on this journey through what some have called the scariest movie of all time. Okay, so our minute begins with Father Marin saying, "Damien!"
And it ends with him facing Howdy alone.
Yes, folks, these two are finally alone together. I think that's what Howdy wanted all along. But before that, let's get back to the top of this minute. They are not alone yet. Dimmy is with them, although he is having a rough time of it. You'll remember last time Howdy had begun to speak to him in his mother's voice, which turned out to be the last straw. It was just too much for Dimmy, and he had broken down, uttering his heartbreaking cry of "You're not my mother." Marin had just entered the room, urging him not to listen, but Howdy continued his assault. We ended on a shot of Dimmy sobbing dryly with his head in his hand, and that's where we pick back up on that shot. From there, we cut. It's another one of those over-the-shoulders that's not really an over-the-shoulder because the subject is turned away. It would be over Dimmy's shoulder, but his shoulders are slumped and he's facing the wall, so it looks like we're behind him sitting up on the bed, almost like what Howdy's view would be, but not quite.
Yeah, Dimmy's like in a fetal position. If he were on the floor on his side, he'd be in the fetal position. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Damien is as ball-shaped as he would like to be.
Exactly. The only thing stopping him from becoming a complete ball is sitting on that bed right now.
And social embarrassment.
And social embarrassment, right? Yeah. That's what keeps me from becoming a complete ball. Yeah, so we're a little bit behind him. And from here, we see Marin standing just inside the doorway, his hand still resting on that doorframe, the other one clutching the Roman ritual and his small satchel of holy water. He's all suited up again. He's wearing his stole. He's got his cassock, his glasses, and he says, "Damien," in a tone that I don't think we can interpret any other way other than that of a father reprimanding his son. But Keenan, I'm looking at his face in this brief shot, and despite knowing what's going to happen in just a few seconds, doesn't his expression seem less harsh and more concerned? Like, yes, concerned for the whole situation and how Dimmy is jeopardizing it right now, but also concerned for Dimmy. Do you see that too?
Yeah, it's a harsh, "Hey, Damien, like, don't put your hand on the stove," or "Damien, you know, why are you getting back together with that girl? We've had this talk a million times,"
right?
Yeah, but it's still like, you know, because I'm worried about you, of course.
Right.
I've seen where this goes. And,
yeah.
Right. Why, yeah. Why you no listen to me, Jimmy?
He's not aware that that's a trigger for Karis, and he's just like, "Why do you do this, Jimmy?" And Karis is just, "Oh." It's like, "What? What did I say? How does that? I don't know."
Yeah, it certainly, I mean, it could feel upset to Damien on when we're on a shot of Damien. It could feel like Marin is upset. But when you look at Marin, he's not upset. He's, worried. What else could I do to get through to you?
Yeah.
How do I get through to these kids?
Yeah. So... I like it. We're, you know, still Marin, he is concerned for everyone in the room, including Dimmy.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, Howdy is having a ball with this new bit that he's developed. After a very quick shot of Dimmy, head still down, hand covering his face, we cut to a close-up of Howdy still with that plaintive, pleading face, the ones that you see in the paintings of saints. It's so complete. There's not a hint of a smile or a smirk. I'm so used to movies giving me subtle winks that a character is lying, even if I already know they're lying. Mm-hmm. Like, you follow a con artist and you watch them do their thing and you know they're a con artist, and the film is constantly tossing you these little treats, these little micro expressions, these little tells, and it makes you in on the con. You feel smarter than the person getting conned. I'm so used to the movie showing me that someone is lying that when it doesn't show me, and I'm surprised by someone revealing themselves as the villain in the final act, I get upset. I feel like it's unearned. Frozen.
Because you couldn't play along at home?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, like in Agatha Christie, does that get you upset? Because I've never been able to really guess at Agatha Christie.
I have a confession.
Uh-huh.
I haven't read any Agatha Christie.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
It's great because if you don't know these, I'm excited. When you read some Agatha Christie, get into your headspace and see, like, could you predict this or not? So that's exciting. Okay. When someone confesses that, that's not like, oh, how come you haven't read something? That's really, really exciting. I'm jumping up and down in my chair. I want you to read some so bad.
Well, don't jump up and down. It's going to ruin the audio.
So do you know The Mousetrap?
No.
The Mousetrap is like the
longest. Is it that game that's like really complicated? And Are you gonna like reveal to me that the world of Agatha Christie and the world of The Exorcist is interconnected via Carl?
Milton Bradley or whatever. Well, you know, I mean
the killers were Milton and Bradley.
Well, I mean, that's my confession.
They call themselves the Parker Brothers.
All right, here's my confession. We have several episodes that are about Mousetrap. Uh-huh. I've never played Mousetrap.
Oh.
So all of me complaining about losing all, that's just me intuiting what my parents would say and why they wouldn't get us Mousetrap.
Is this the episode of Confessions? Is this an excellent day for Confessions? Is that what's going on? It's like, I've never even seen The Exorcist. I've just...
Right, I've never met Lester. We said we need some kind of uniting force for this. Mm-hmm, so let's pretend we've been friends for a couple decades.
Right. Yeah, this was all made up, right? And our continued friendship, or the beginning of our friendship, hinges upon the success of this show.
Right.
So if we get, oh, I don't know, 1,000 5-star reviews, I'll know that it was all worth it.
Right. And we'll book a train ticket and meet each other halfway.
Exactly.
Vegas and LA. But I mean, that's what happens at the end of our movie is the beginning of a beautiful friendship and two people who've never met before. So we just thought that'd be the best way to end this podcast.
Well, that's the ending that you hate, though, right?
It's terrible. But no. So Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap. Uh-huh.
Yes.
It was the longest. It was continuously running since it came out in the 30s in the West End. It had never closed, but it got closed for the pandemic.
Mm.
So it was this huge, like, long, unbroken streak. But they make you at the beginning and end, like, swear you to secrecy to not tell the ending of The Mousetrap. And so then I was reminded of this at some point. I was like, I don't know what the ending, this is great. Like so many times, like, I knew the ending of The Sixth Sense going into it because I saw it a couple of months after. I knew the ending of The Usual Suspects. I knew the ending of Fight Club. Right. So I was like, oh, this is one I actually don't know. And so I'm going to go and buy that book before it's too late. So I went and read it. And it's not a great Agatha Christie compared to And Then There Were None, which is just you know, fantastic, or any of the ones. But anyways, like, but it is a great solution to a mystery.
It really is
outstanding. So I gotta get you to see The Mousetrap or read The Mousetrap.
Okay, I'm gonna have to check it out, folks. You guys gotta be like my accountability buddies. You gotta write in and check and see if I've read The Mousetrap yet.
It is I'm excited. So okay. I'm glad. I try. It's so hard sometimes to not be that person who's like, you've never seen The Godfather? And all your instincts are like, what? Mm-hmm. What? How dare you? But I try very hard not to be, because I think it's exciting. You get to go see The Godfather for the first time. That's so cool.
Right. We get to relive that experience through you.
Right. Yeah. But then I think I've said it on the show, but when someone tells me, you know, I've never seen any of the Star Wars, I say, don't start now.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
just move on with your life. Right. There are other things to do.
If you start now, mm-hmm. it's like starting an antibiotic. And if you start and then stop,
mm-hmm.
then
it's even worse than if it's you hadn't gonna started. Yeah, because the midichlorians, they get stronger. Just, yeah. They are antibiotic-resistant midichlorians.
Exactly. But, what I'm saying, Keenan, mm-hmm. is, and tell me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. but I feel like no matter how good of a liar somebody is on film, no matter how good of an act they're putting on mm-hmm. to deceive somebody else, there's some kind of like unspoken rule that we have to see like a little bit of a wink. Like, you know, as Dracula is like, I never drink wine. And it just that little, like, even if we don't know exactly what's being hidden, we know that something is being hidden.
Well, I mean, I guess, but what if you don't want the audience to know that anything's being hidden? Frozen.
Yeah.
I mean, that reveal in Frozen is pretty cool. I mean, you know, it gets, people are shocked. I've seen it with children and they're, you know.
mm-hmm. I'm going to take your definition of cool as the very literal, because it's a movie called Frozen.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That reveal made me mad.
Because it tricked you.
No, because it didn't follow the rules.
that you're just making up. The rule that it needs to tell you a little bit.
There was a moment mm-hmm. when the bad guy is all alone
mm-hmm.
and they're so giddy and happy that they have fallen in love and they have found someone that they love mm-hmm. and nobody else is around and they just do this little, you know, and mm-hmm. they're so happy.
Right.
There's nobody there to lie to. So that means that's true.
Or it's lying to the audience.
Yeah, but like, they don't know that we're here watching them.
Yeah, I see. That rule I will give you. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense, yes.
Yeah.
But here with Captain Howdy, right, it's like Captain Howdy is such a good liar that he's able to get us like all this sympathy for him, not just Reagan, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's breaking some kind of, I don't know what rule he's breaking, mm-hmm. but he's the father of lies, or at least the stepfather of lies, because he's right. not the devil, he's a devil.
Right. Yeah, yeah. He's the older brother of lies. Second cousin of lies.
Twice removed.
Twice removed, yeah. All right. But no, like, yeah, there was no smirk, there's no, like, when he's saying, Dimmy, please, in Mama Karras's voice, mm-hmm. you look at that face and it looks like it is pleading with Dimmy.
Right.
And there's no like hint of a smile or a smirk or anything. And it just it baffles me how this demon can play the part so well that you almost feel sorry for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, so what I'm saying here is somehow it has the opposite effect here. Howdy seems mm-hmm. so sincere without even the slightest hint that he's enjoying this torture of Karras, right? You almost wonder if maybe it's not actually Mama Karras in there. Like if you showed this scene to somebody but without sound and they saw Linda Blair talking to Jason Miller and they look at Linda Blair's face, you might think if there was no sound that this was Reagan pleading with the priests to save her.
Mm-hmm.
That's how committed to the deception Howdy is. And I'm jumping ahead, but even after Dimmy leaves, Howdy continues. We don't cut back to him, you know, and there's a like a tiny little, you know, smirk. It's like, ah, got him, right? Like her face doesn't even drop the plaintive look and go neutral. It just stays like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I rewatched it with the sound off while you were talking, and yeah, it looks like please get this demon out of me, please.
Right.
You know, like, oh my gosh, help me so much. I'm tied up here. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what happens when you play like mafia or a werewolf among us or just among us or you know?
Oh,
Do you get pissed at people? Do you get mad for not having little hints that they're the werewolf or they're the mafia?
Well, I think these problems go hand in hand because I am the worst player of those games.
Oh, really?
Because I can't help. But like, if I'm the werewolf, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's like I'm not the werewolf. And then I just do a little shifty-eyed glance and, you know, put my pinky to my mouth and No, I don't do that. But it, like, I can't help it. Like, I can't help, like, there's just a little tone in my voice or a little mm-hmm. like, no. Folks, I am the worst liar. I have never been able to successfully lie to somebody.
I guess except when it's about whether you've read a book.
I mean,
but hey, Lester, are you the werewolf?
Oh, is that what we're playing right now? I thought we were playing Mousetrap by Agatha Christie, which I read. The Mousetrap.
Guys, I think Lester's the werewolf.
No, no, no. If I was the werewolf, I would tell you. I would totally tell you. I think you're the werewolf. I think this is projection. Guys, everyone. Keenan's the werewolf.
I am not the werewolf.
Well, I have nothing to say to that. Yeah. No, I protest too much.
Why would I be the werewolf? I don't think anyone's a werewolf. I think we messed up. We none of us drew the werewolf card.
Actually, is there a werewolf card in this? We should have checked before we played. We should have done a practice run. You know what? Call the company. What company is this? Look at the bottom of the box.
Let me look at the discard pile and see if there's the werewolves in there. We might have done it wrong.
Guys, I'm so angry on all of our behalves that we can't have a fun one-night werewolf card game because we're missing all of the werewolf cards. Gee, Willikers. But yeah, so Howdy says here, Dimmy, please. Even as Marin is trying to get Dimmy's attention, they're both talking over each other. Marin has called Dimmy's name a second time. We cut back. We're behind Dimmy again. He straightens up to look at Marin, and this always is such a gut punch. Marin mm-hmm. motions with his head, and he says, "Get out." And he says it quietly, not with anger or frustration, but also not with any kind of warmth. I misremember this every single time, maybe because, you know, in the book, Marin is a little bit more urgent and a little more gentle, if that makes sense. He puts his hand on Dimmy's shoulder and he's like, go and have a rest. Don't listen. Go now. Mm-hmm. But here, he doesn't say anything about a rest. He just says, get out. Mm-hmm. With this cold finality, like, I knew you couldn't do it. Keenan, how do you feel about this moment? Like, do you read it this way?
I think again, when we're on Damien, it certainly reads that way. When we read Karis, we don't see any kind of recrimination. It's just very literal. There's to get out, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, on Karis' side, it really does feel like, yeah, all that guilt. I know you couldn't do what you're saying is the subtext here, but, mm-hmm. but what is the it here? The it is all of it, not just yeah. talking to the demon by yourself.
Right.
Not just hey,
life in general.
Yeah. Just... I caught you talking to this demon and you wanted to do it by yourself and you're not good enough to, and you know, that's a bad idea and you weren't listening to me, but also you like on Damien's side, maybe it's even like, now I know what you've been haunted by. You did something terrible to your mother. So, you know, how many people has he told about his fears of this, you know?
Right.
Like, I don't know. Has he told Chris? I don't think so.
No. So nobody. Yeah, that's a good point. Nobody knows the trouble he's seen. No.
Right. They know that he's upset about his mother. And right. maybe even Father Dyer just thinks it's that and not that he's blaming himself for this. Because I think, you know, like, intellectually, Damien knows that if he tells anyone, they're just going to say, no, it's not your fault, etc.
Exactly. I think that's it. I think he, and by extension of that, he also knows that it isn't his fault.
Right.
And, that's such a weird brain twister, because he knows enough, he's smart enough to where if he knows that if he admitted it to anybody, mm-hmm. they'd be like, oh, no, that's ridiculous. You're not right. responsible for her death. And, you did everything you could, and you went to see her, every week, and you're dropping money off and mm-hmm. doing all these things. And, but you couldn't get her to a private hospital, because who's got the money for that, Dimmy? Mm-hmm. They would lay his fears to rest.
Right.
And
but that's not what he wants.
Exactly. Yeah. Some part of him mm-hmm. is like, if I bring it up to anybody, they will make me feel better about it, and right. I don't want to feel better about right. it.
They won't validate my feelings. They'll just try to tell me why it's wrong to have my feelings, right?
Ah, okay. There we go. Right, because, those have to be validated. Whether, he did something or didn't, mm-hmm. he still feels this, and he, They'll brush it off. They'll be like, oh, no, you're just being silly.
No, yeah, right. Yeah. So, but then he'd be like, but Joe, she said, why are you doing this to me, Damien? And Dyer, from as an outside perspective, will be able to say, like, that's not what she meant, Damien. I think that's not what she meant. And she just wanted answers. And she, you were the first person who could explain things to her. And that's not what Damien wants her. Feels like he needs, right? Mm-hmm. He needs to be punished. He needs to wear a hair shirt for a little while longer.
Mm.
Yeah. But yeah, Marin now catches him in living this thing out, right? Which is super.
Yeah.
So it's not just like, oh, you didn't do everything. It's just embarrassing. Like I was role playing, with this devil, my deep seated guilt, and you were watching. Like, how long have you been there? Like,
Right.
It's not, he says to the demon, like, Father Marin's right behind me, isn't he? He turned around and Marin's there tapping his clipboard.
What did I tell you about indulging in this dark fantasy?
Don't. That's right, don't.
Now go out there and sit in the corner and think about it for a little bit. Yeah, it's a guilty thing. He caught Dimmy, doing something like very, very private, just indulging in this dark fantasy of him being the wrong one.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the right word for it. I think that there is this, the dark fantasy idea of, yes, when we think of fantasy, we're like, oh, what if I got to be with my crush? What if I got to live in a farm and raise puppies? And what if I won the lottery and all of that, right? But I think it's very human to have these dark fantasies, right?
Oh, yeah.
One of the reasons why, disasters and things that happen on the news are so fascinating to us, even if we know that they're such a remote idea, is because we start to think, what if I was trapped down in that fucking cave and the water was coming in and none of us knew how to swim? And, what would that be like? What if I was at a bank that got held up at gunpoint, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, what if I experienced, demons and monsters coming in and destroy? That's why we like horror movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would I do in that situation? Would I be strong enough? Would I not be strong enough?
Right. I read somewhere that it has to do, maybe not this exact thing, but the dwelling on these dark fantasies has to do with a survival thing where we kind of we put ourselves to the test. We play it out in our minds and we say, okay, how would I deal with that? How would I deal with the fact that I was responsible for my mother's death? Mm-hmm. I let her I left her alone to die. I did all of these things. How does that sit with me? How can I make sense of the world if that is true, and mm-hmm. just like playing it over and over. And the insidious thing is, it's like scratching a mosquito bite. Mm-hmm. Is the more you play it out, the farther away from an answer you get. Like, I still do this all the time. Mm. There's a part of my brain that says, oh, what if that thing did happen? Mm-hmm. Let's go there for a little bit and play it out, and let's really sit in it and live in it and make sure that if it ever does happen in the future, we'll be okay, because we'll know how to receive it. Mm-hmm. But you, like, that's the trick. That's the lie that you tell yourself, is no matter how long you stay in that darkness, trying to get a sense of it, it's never going to give you an answer. It's never going to make you be like, okay, if this happens, I'll be okay with it. No, mm-hmm. no. It's when tragedy happens or when bad things happen, it's always a surprise, and it's always going to hit you in a way that you didn't expect. So mm-hmm. so dwelling on something or expecting something or imagining something bad is doing us no favors.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a fear of flying that I've gotten mm. better about, just because I had to fly more and more. You know, if there were something terrible to happen on an airplane, like mm-hmm. as I was flying to go and meet you for the first time at the end of our exactly. podcast, right? Mm-hmm. Right? If something were to happen, you'd die instantly, would be more likely than most of our dark fantasies of it. Of, oh, there's time and mm-hmm. there's a plane crash and we crash somewhere and I'm in the desert now all of a sudden. And right. I survive these things, right? You know, if something were to depressurize in the cabin, you know, and something were to go really bad, I'd just pass out and no longer be. But that's not right. how the fantasies go, right? That's not the dark fantasy. They're always about you having time and, you know, thinking about strategies and mm-hmm. So yeah, that makes sense. It's survival thing. It's like built in us to imagine terrible things happening, to practice what we would do, right?
Right.
But
physically,
know,
and emotional
and emotionally dangers. Yeah. And yeah, but most
likely, what if my girlfriend told me that she didn't love me? How would I, you know, let me just like fantasize about that.
Yeah.
Even though, like, we got a, you know, a nice healthy relationship going on, what if it wasn't?
Yeah. What if she was cheating on me? What if yeah.
Let's just like play in that land for a little bit. No, don't do that.
Right. Damien. Get out.
Well, that's right. I don't even have a girlfriend. I'm a priest. Yeah, so Marin has said, get out. And we cut back to Dimmy, and it looks as if Marin's words have frozen him on the spot. Again, 75% of his face is in shadow, just a thin sliver, and one eye, which catches the light in a way which makes me wonder if there are tears there. Even Howdy is looking at him like, geez, Marin, that was a little harsh. And then after a moment, Dimmy rises from the bed, rises up out of frame, and we cut to the over-the-shoulder, over Marin's shoulder from before. Dimmy walks up to Marin, and he stops. And this next moment surprised me, because I was all ready to talk about how, you know, now it's Dimmy's turn to not look Marin in the eye. Remember, in previous minutes, when Howdy cut Marin down to size temporarily, there was a time where Marin couldn't meet Dimmy's gaze. And at first I thought, well, you know, here we go. This is the mirror opposite of that. But not quite, because Dimmy sort of steals himself and slowly looks up at Marin, as if maybe he's going to say something, maybe he's going to explain himself or apologize or defy Marin. Like, I don't know what he's trying to do here, or even if he knows, but ultimately, it's so sad. What do we make of him stopping and looking up at Marin here? Like, what do you think he was hoping to do?
Yeah, to me, it looks like he's wants to tell him and explain himself, like, what this is all about. Yeah, yeah. Like, why he's talking to her and what, you know, you probably want to know what these voices are and who this was he's impersonating, et cetera. And I don't know, you know, at a that'd be like the third time where Marin would be like, why would I want to know that?
Yeah.
So
and he might know that on some level. It's like why does that matter?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to hear him say that would not feel good for Dimmy.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he goes to say something and then whatever that is, the stupidity or the embarrassment he's feeling on that, he can't not only not say what he's thinking about saying, whatever that is, because mm-hmm. you kind of agree that he's looks like he's going to say something. It's a fake out for us that some kind of exchange is going to happen. But yeah, he can't even handle it. And he tends to just looking away from him.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah, whatever's going on, he cannot hold that gaze for long. Mm-hmm. He turns his head in shame. And here, Marin shows some compassion. That's the Marin we know and love. He puts a hand on Dimmy's shoulder. And watching super slow and frame by frame, like we got to do for this show, it almost looks like he's going to pull him in to a hug at first. And I was like, oh, someone is finally going to hug Dimmy. This whole movie is torture porn of people not hugging Dimmy or Chris. And you just want to scream like, hold him. Just hold him for 1 second. Would it kill you, Father Marin? For Christ's sake, somebody hug somebody else in this goddamn movie. Christ, 88 two shots and not a single fucking hug. But no, he's guiding him out of the room. Maybe there would have been hugs later. I feel like when time isn't of the essence, and there's no danger, I feel like Marin is one of those people who, like, he sees that you need something like a hug or like a hand clasp or something, mm-hmm. and he would do that for you. He's been doing that type of thing, right? Holding people's hands, looking them in the eye, making them feel at ease. But right now, he is guiding Dimmy out.
Yeah, we're gonna see him do that again, hand claps somebody. Right. Yeah, real soon. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So at first Dimmy doesn't budge, and we see Marin's guiding hand get a little firmer. It's still gentle, but it's insistent. And so he guides him to the door. We cut, and it's still over Marin's shoulder, but now we're watching Dimmy walk out that door, and we hear his breath catching in his chest, and we can't tell if it's from the cold or from emotion. Either way, it's heartbreaking, and I don't know why. It's not visually similar, but this shot made me think of Dimmy closing the door on Chris as she looks at him plaintively. Here, Dimmy doesn't even turn back. It's as if Marin's hand has propelled him on this course, and he is just sort of floating or drifting down that hallway like a ghost.
Yeah, the power of Christ has propelled him.
Yeah, there we go. Right, we've got repelled, we've got compelled, we've got propelled,
expelled.
Expelled. Yeah,
that's what happens at a Catholic school when you flunk out.
The power of Christ expels you.
Yes.
You got to say it three times, or it doesn't stick.
Right.
It's got to be the president, the head of school, and the dean Jesuit.
Right.
Right. Yeah, the power of Christ expels you. Right. But yeah, so he is being expelled from that room. And this sounds absolutely ridiculous, but you can see and hear all of Dimmy's thoughts right now as he walks down that hallway away from us. It's all rushing in on him. He has failed. He has failed Reagan, failed Chris, failed his mother, failed his father in Marin, mm-hmm. and failed God. And he's numb. He's not even seeing that hallway. And there's not even an indication in the movie that he's allowed back in the room.
Hmm.
In the book, Marin tells him to go and rest. Here, it could just as plausibly be that he has been banished from the room because he is unfit, right? Going back to, you know, what he said to Tom Birmingham, right? I need out. I'm unfit.
Hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, if... because where he ends up and takes his break, that makes a lot of sense. So we'll talk about that, obviously when we get there. But in the screenplay, it's not where he ends up in the movie. In the screenplay, he ends up in the breakfast nook, hanging out there, which is a much more reasonable place for him to be resting. So, yeah, that's interesting here. He doesn't go to rest there in the movie. He goes to rest in a hallway, you know, which might be implying that he's thinking of leaving.
It's very close to the front door.
Yeah.
It was something I thought about in this viewing. There is no indication that he is coming back, right?
Right.
And that's maybe really I'm just being dumb. Oh, okay, good.
No, that's really interesting. Yeah, yeah. Why, you know, if this is, take a break. He doesn't go to the kitchen. He doesn't go to daddy's room. Doesn't go to the bedrooms. He's just, you know. So maybe, again, I don't think it is that Marin or Chris or anyone are going to kick him out. They want him there. But for him, he's stuck in the transom, you know, the space between places. He's not sure where he belongs.
Right.
He doesn't go into daddy's room and say, Truey, what would you do in this situation?
Drew's like, get out.
All right, this is even dumber.
Oh, God, Truey.
This is even dumber. He doesn't go into the basement and bring out the Ouija board and is like, Cap'n Howdy, what do you think I should do?
And that's when upstairs in the room, Captain Howdy sort of like breaks his act and he's like, wait, are you serious? Oh my God, do you not understand that we're the same? Oh my God. No, buddy, Karis, it was me.
Maybe you should have winked a little bit more and told me you were the bad guy. Maybe in some kind of indication.
Wow, you've seen too many bad movies, I guess.
Well, geez,
have you never read Agatha Christie?
Yeah, don't want to play poker against this guy.
Yeah,
he doesn't have any corporeal form.
So he doesn't have a poker face. He doesn't have a face. We're trying to deal with this really sad scene right here. And so, yeah, so Marin closes the door, and before it even closes, the sounds of the room, which we had sort of drowned out, or maybe they actually did get objectively quieter during this emotional bit here, as Marin closes the door, these sounds come flooding back. Nothing identifiable, just the sound of the room, this low, ominous thrum, which also sounds like maybe wind moving through some vast hollow space. Mm. And over that, you can also hear Howdy growling, Howdy shivering, and these thin, shallow breaths. Now, we cut just as Marin closes the door. His hand goes up, and he leans on it for a second. He musters his strength, and then he turns to the bed. And his expression can either be read as intense pity for this little girl, or maybe intense fear, as he realizes he is now alone with the demon that almost killed him all those years ago. And as he moves from the door, his hand falls back down to his side. He reaches the foot of the bed and instinctively grasps the bedpost, though it doesn't look like he's doing it for support, except maybe the mental kind. Mm. Just something to grasp, something to hold.
Yeah, I think I do read the pity for it. I don't read fear here, which is interesting. Earlier, I'd been arguing more for that, I think, you had. But yeah, I don't see fear. I just see compassion. And yeah, I don't know. Gripping the bedpost, it feels like it's sort of habit for him. Yeah. Rather than something he actually needs it right now, it just sort of, like, normally I'm a weak man, but he doesn't look weak right now.
Yeah, actually, I have that in my notes. I'm going to talk about it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so from here, we cut to a close-up of Howdy, and he's still wearing that pitiful, saintly, suffering expression as Reagan's chest hitches up and down with each shallow breath. Another cut, and we're back on Marin as he makes his way slowly across and up to the left side of the bed. On his way, he also reaches out to grasp the bottom left bedpost as he passes. Again, not for support. It put me in mind of someone who's about to leave their house and they're sort of touching stuff to make sure everything is in place. Mm-hmm. You know, before a big journey, you almost get the feeling that he's saying goodbye to the physical world and he's reaching out and he's touching things. Mm.
Yeah, I was late to the recording session today by about half an hour because I couldn't find my wallet and, you know, getting, I don't know. I don't think it's all age. I think I'm normally someone who can't remember where I put my wallet. Mm-hmm. And there's a normal spot where I put my wallet and I couldn't find it. And I looked throughout the entire house. I went to my car and wasn't in there. And I came back and you know where my wallet was?
Where?
Exactly where it's supposed to be, except someone had left a baseball cap on top of it.
Someone. or some.
Some.
Keenan.
Yeah, some me. But I was I wasn't trusting my own eyes. I was touching things all over.
Yes. Isn't that weird? Like you, it's like, oh, it should be here. Mm-hmm. I see with my eyes that it's not here. Well, I'm just going to touch the space, right? Yeah. My keys are usually in my pocket, but they're not in my pocket. I just checked. Mm-hmm. Let me check again.
I'm going to touch my butt a little longer.
Then Father O'Meara walks in. Damien!
No,
sorry. I wasn't touching my butt. I was looking for my keys, like a non werewolf would do. A non werewolf who isn't guilty about leaving his mother alone to die. Oh God! It's all falling on top of each other. This really is a mousetrap.
Oh, that's the solution. You guessed it.
Yeah, there we go.
The end of the mousetrap is the main character looking downstage goes, "This really is a mousetrap." And everyone else just nodding, so tired, so tired.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. This truly was the perfect storm. Did we already do that joke?
I bet we did.
He truly was the Godfather. These really are aliens.
Well, Louis, it turns out this entire time we've been in Casablanca.
Oh, what's a really stupid title?
A really stupid title?
I think we did this joke with the man who walked up a hill and went down a mountain or something.
Yeah, the Englishman who went up a hill and came down a mountain.
Yeah, yeah.
That might be the stupidest title.
Yeah, yeah. So let's do it again and pretend this is the first time. No.
I mean, it's not a stupid title, but I guess it's like, so that's how Stella got her groove back.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or I suppose this really was the never ending story. The end.
Wow. Wait. Wow. He really was Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula. I had to do my Keanu.
Keanu.
Longer. Yeah.
But count. All right.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Keenan, is there anything else?
No, I think we got it.
Yeah, folks, we got it. And we also got an email. I'm so excited. This is from John. He actually sent us a couple emails, which I want to read. Maybe what we'll do, Keenan, we'll have like a listener email roundup. We'll give folks a chance to write in before we have this episode, and then we can just read all of the emails that they send into us. What do you think?
That sounds great. Somewhere near the end of our run on the movie. Yeah, hear all your thoughts about it.
Yeah, I think so. That'd be good. But for now, yeah, let's read this first one that he sent us. So yeah, so this is John, and the email is titled "A Few Catholic Things." I really like that. That's a nice little, like, you know, what would you say? It's like a little picture book.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. A few Catholic things, right? And then you just open. And the first page is just blank with the word guilt.
They all say guilt.
it's just different pictures with the word guilt. No. I'm actually really glad we got this email. So John introduces himself. He says he's a little late to the game. He is a Catholic. He is church going. He says, first, in Mary's apartment. So folks, like, let's go way, way, way back when we were in Mary's apartment. So there was a statue on the dresser next to, like, all of the photos. There was that photo of Karis, and there was that photo of what we thought maybe like a young Mama Karis, right? And there was this little statue, and I tried to do some research, like the Christ child, but we talked about in that episode how we don't really have a lot of images of Jesus as like a kid. We have the baby and we have the grown up, but we don't have the kid, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is what John says. He says, the statue is called the Infant of Prague. It's an old time statue. You could change the clothing for the season. Interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm looking at the Infant Jesus of Prague statue. There's a famous one, mm-hmm. Which is in Prague, in the Malostrana. But yeah, there are all these little ones you could have at home. And yeah, you can change their clothing out for the season. So wow. Yeah, John answered that. That's absolutely correct, I think.
Yeah. And in this email, John also talks about side altars. Remember, we were talking about side altars back when the priest we thought was John J. Nicola, he was carrying those two flowers and he was setting them in front of each side altar. Mm-hmm. So John says, before Vatican II, only one priest could celebrate Mass at one time. If more than one priest wanted to celebrate Mass, a priest could celebrate Mass at a side altar. So he says this was a problem leading to the Reformation. People pay money for a Mass to be said, so mm-hmm. in many churches it became a conveyor belt for Masses. Luther was upset that he was being rushed when he said Mass. Interesting. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Luther himself. Mm. But yeah, that stuff is all really, really interesting. Thank you so much, John.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah. And folks, yeah, if you want to write in, if you noticed something in these minutes, I keep on forgetting that people are jumping onto the show like every day. So they're mm-hmm. seeing, so they're like today, there is somebody watching, you know, episode 72 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, I know about that thing. And like, and yeah, so write in and tell us if you caught something that we didn't catch. Okay, folks, this has been another excellent Exorcist Minute. I've been Lester Ryan Clark. You can reach me on all the socials as Lester Ryan Clark.
And I've been Keenan Diaz. You can find me on Instagram and Letterboxd at Howdy Keenan.
Yeah, we got our listener group, Compelling Conversations. Go check that out and request to join, and we'll let you in here with us. Thank you so much to everyone who has shared the show by word of mouth or on social media. And a big thank you to everyone who has given us a 5-star ratings on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to our show. We really appreciate it. It's going to help our little podcast grow and find more cool people like you. And thank you to John for writing in, and anybody else, if you want to write in, please do. Let us know what you think of the movie. Let us know your experiences with it. We always love hearing that stuff. Okay. Keenan, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I think I am, Lester.
Folks, until next time, the power of One Night Ultimate Werewolf compels you.
Yeah, I look through the discard pile and there's no werewolves in there. So,
really?
Yeah, it's really odd.
Maybe just check again.
Let's see. We got the troublemaker, right? The Tanner, the uh-huh. seer.
Oh, you got the seer. Because I got the seer.
That's interesting. You can't be a werewolf if you're the seer.
Right? No, definitely not. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe there's two. Maybe you know what they did? They gave us two seers and no werewolves.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
What a ripoff. I'm so upset.
Well, I guess we'll just pack this game up, put it back.
No,
we'll send it to the. Yeah.
No. What if we just continued playing and see what happens?
Even though none of us is the werewolf.
You still want to
keep going another night round.
Sure. Who knows?
Well, that's a weird way to win. At least that way we can tell when we write to the manufacturer that this is the terrible experience we had.
Right. So. We have to play it all the way through to show them that what a terrible experience we had.
We'll take pictures and we'll send it in.
Sure. I'll take pictures of my cards, but they're going to be on my phone.
Okay.
Until we're all done.
All right. Just send that to me when we're done.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Let's do the night round.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, everybody, put your heads down.
Mm-hmm.
And me, I'm going to also put my head down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you just someone just tapped me?
Did somebody just tap Keenan?
Someone just tapped me.
Hey, everyone. We're supposed to be serious about this right now.
I died when there's no werewolf.
Oh my gosh, Keenan. Do you think maybe there is a werewolf?
I can't imagine. This is going in my letter. I tell you that. I tell you that much.
This is all sorts of topsy-turvy. And boy, am I thrown for a loop.
Oh, I'm just so... You finish the game and I'll just be upstairs writing this letter.
Who would have thought that one of you guys is a really good liar?
Ugh.
Wow.
This is the worst game of One Night Ultimate Werewolf I've ever played. I should have brought my copy from home instead of yours. It's just terrible. I'm so sorry, guys.
Your copy would probably have had an adequate amount of werewolves, I think.
I'm just so sorry, everybody. This is just terrible.
I am too. I'm sorry on Keenan's behalf. But I think he took the bullet. For all of us, and got eaten by that by one of you.
Yeah, I'm just so sorry. This is the worst baby shower I've ever put. All right, well, let's go. Let's cut this cake for the gender reveal, everybody. Let's gather around. So it's blue for boy and pink for girl, of course. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody ready? We cut, and it's black. Black inside.
Oh my god.
What does that even mean?
Wait. Keenan, there's something in there. Can you fish around with your hand in there and pull it out.
It's some paper. It's like a card. Werewolf!
Oh my god. Denise! You said you weren't the werewolf, but you kind of also are. I had no idea you were playing for two. Wait, I thought that... Wait, then what is my card? Oh, Tanner. Okay, fine.